This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. The measles outbreak that started at Disneyland in California has spread to 8 states, Canada, and Mexico. But the vaccine discussion is what's really gone viral. The national conversation has gotten heated, loud, and personal. Vermont is not immune to the debate. The state requires kids to have certain vaccinations in order to attend school, but 3 exceptions to that rule are allowed: medical, religious, and philosophical. In both the House and the Senate, bills have been introduced that would eliminate the philosophical exemption. The House bill would also eliminate the religious exemption. Today on Vermont Edition, we're going to spend the hour talking about all of this. First, we're going to hear from one of the sponsors of the legislation. Then we'll hear from the Vermont Coalition on Vaccine Choice to find out why that organization thinks the exemptions should stay in place, and fundamentally why they believe that parents should have more options when it comes to required and recommended vaccines. And we're going to spend the second half of the show exploring the science and medical recommendations behind vaccinations with a local pediatrician. Listeners, you can share your concerns for any of our guests on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net or call 1-800-639-2211. If you have specific questions about the bills that are working their way through the House and the Senate, now's the time to call in about that. Again, our number 1-800-639-2211. And we're joined now by Senator Kevin Mullen, lead sponsor of the Senate bill to eliminate the philosophical exemption. Senator Mullen, nice to talk with you today.
Well, it's great to talk to you too, Jane.
You sponsored a similar bill back in 2012. It passed the Senate, but it failed to pass in the House. And the governor has said all along that he opposes eliminating the philosophical exemption. Why is this an issue that's so important to you?
Well, it's an issue that's important to me because when my son was a student at the University of New Hampshire, one of his good friends went to a smaller state college that didn't require vaccinations, and he ended up getting a disease and dying. And so that has always stuck out as a family discussion of how things can go wrong when people make poor decisions. And Vermont, what prompted me in 2012 to bring forward the legislation, at that time I was a member of the healthcare committee, and I was reading an online article that gets, I assume, sent to every member of a healthcare committee around the United States, but it basically showed how poorly Vermont was doing in its successful vaccination rates. And so at that time, I put in a bill. It passed very easily in the Senate, ran into some stiff objection in the House, and we went to a conference committee and we put out a bill that basically just required educational materials to be given to parents. But despite what the governor has called an elegant solution to the problem that was crafted in 2012, I don't think a solution is elegant when we have gone from a 5.4% unvaccinated rate to a 6.1%. We're heading in the wrong direction. And the recent national discussion over the measles outbreak just seemed like the right opportunity to try to bring this discussion forward again and try to get the right scientific information out to people, because nowadays there is so much junk science and so much that if somebody can argue any side of any issue nowadays and go online and find documentation. But one of the major reasons why many people fought vaccines for a number of years is they believe there was a link to autism. And in fact, Autism First has even come out and said there is no such link and encourages people to be vaccinated. And the lead scientist on that, a scientist from England, was charged criminally. And so we need to stop looking at the wrong information and look at the right information. And I was looking.
But so why then mandate it? If the issue is education and people understanding the science, why is removing the philosophical exemption the right choice? Why not put more money at, make sure that there's added resources for the health department or for doctors or in whatever way to do that education rather than a mandate?
Well, we gave the health department under Dr. Chen the opportunity to do a better job with education, and they have attempted to do that, but we're still seeing the rates going in the wrong direction. And as I look back at my notes from 3 years ago, I have a letter here from Rosalind Carter that said that Vermont is the only New England state in the New England region that allows for a philosophical exemption. You know, I tried to think of a better way to educate people and try to find a way to get more kids vaccinated. But when you look at the empirical data shows that the state that did the best with improving the vaccination rate was Oregon, which removed the philosophical exemption, and they reduced the number of the unimmunized by 25%. So I think that this is good that, you know, you and others are providing an educational opportunity for people. You're going to hear from the opposing side, and they're going to throw out some information. And I just hope that people listen very carefully, that they talk to people that they trust. When we went about this in 2012, we went to the University of Vermont and asked them to do some research for us. The Jefford Center put together a study that was overseen by Professor Gorchek, and that study came back and said that the benefits from vaccines far exceed the risks, and that vaccinations are the right thing to do. And I hope that people get that message, because if they make a poor decision, it may not be their child that dies, but it could be their best friend's baby. It could be someone who's a teacher at a school with a compromised immune system. And, you know, we don't need to keep hearing these horror stories. Recently, there was a letter to the editor in the Rutland Herald from a woman in the Brattleboro area whose cousin had measles when they were both small children. The cousin ended up with encephalitis, had severe brain damage, and ended up dying 10 years later. And part of the problem is that the current generation wasn't around to witness what happened with polio and other diseases. So if you talk to most of the older population in Vermont, they understand what a key role vaccines have played in bettering the life of everyone in this country.
Let me stop you, Senator Mullen, because you're getting into a lot of interesting points here, but I know we have listeners who want to join the conversation and a couple other points we want to get to. Let me play you a statement from Jennifer Stella, who's with the Vermont Coalition for Vaccine Choice, who just worries about the precedent this sets.
I understand that he may want to make vaccines an exception to the rule that parents are really charged with making those medical decisions for their children. But my question, I guess, to him would be, where does it stop?
So the question there, you know, if you remove the ability for parents to say they have moral or, as it's stated in the Vermont law, philosophic objection to certain vaccines, it's the government basically mandating certain medical procedures if parents want their children to attend school. And that makes some people very uneasy. Can you calm those concerns?
I'm not sure if I can calm those concerns. And I've sat down with Jennifer. She's a very bright person, and I understand her arguments and her side of the story, but the reality is that you have to do an analysis of what is the greatest good for the population, and the greatest good for the population is to have the child immunized. You know, government mandates other things. We don't allow you to have a child, you know, standing up on the back seat of your car as you're driving down the road. And, you know, we do a number of different legislative pieces that are for the safety. And in this particular case, this is not just about the safety of your child, but it's about the safety of others. And, you know, that's the point I want to make. I want to appeal to people to consider the safety of others as they're making their decisions.
When it comes to removing the philosophical exemption, the House bill that's moving through the other chamber would also remove the religious exemption. Why do you keep it? You know, won't parents just be able to check the religious box if they want to be exempt?
They would be able to do that, but what we've seen in other states, there were three states that have removed the philosophical exemption: California, Oregon, and one other that I can't remember at this point. But what we saw was a reduction in the rate of unimmunized children. So obviously it accomplishes the goal. When you see a 25% reduction in Oregon, you can see that it accomplishes the goal. The reason why I have never gone after the religious exemption is I'm not fully convinced that that could stand up in a legal proceeding. Two states, I think it's Mississippi and one other, do not allow for a religious exemption, but I haven't had the chance to do the legal research on why that has held up or if even a challenge has been brought. But, you know, you try to pick your fights according to what you think can be accomplished. And I certainly don't want to take on Christian Scientists or the Amish or anybody else. and I'm trying to do what is possible given the reality of the situation.
We're talking with Senator Kevin Mullen. He's a lead sponsor of a bill to eliminate the philosophical exemption for Vermont's immunization laws. Listeners, if you have a question that you'd like to ask Senator Mullen, or if you have questions about vaccines, the vaccine schedule, medical science surrounding vaccines, our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or you can post on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. We got a note from CS who says, I wonder if we could create charter schools for children who are unvaccinated. That seems the best way to accommodate both sides. With that system, no one will be forced to get an injection that they don't want, and no one would have to send their children to a school with unvaccinated children who may create a health risk. Could that be a possibility, Senator Mullen?
Well, one of my good friends in the Senate, and I won't mention any names, has said to me that why don't we just allow for school choice for both sides of the issue, so that if we currently can track by schools which schools are doing well as far as vaccination rates. And what the proposal would be to set a trigger where if a school went under 90% full vaccination rates, that the parents in that school could opt out and go to any school in the state. So that's one proposal that's been floated out there. I certainly think that education reform should occur, but I'm not so sure that linking the two is still going to solve the bigger problem. And the bigger problem is that we are exposed not just in schools, but in so many different activities.
Well, to that point, let me pause you there, because we got a note from Sarah who says, Canada doesn't have mandatory vaccinations, and there are hundreds of thousands of Canadians crossing the border every day. What about that? Are you going to require them to show vaccination certificates when crossing into Vermont out of Vermont's fear of unvaccinated people affecting their vaccinated children and adults?
Well, that's the first time that question has come up, and not knowing what Canada does require, I'm not sure I have an answer for you at this time, Jane, other than to say that, you know, that is a key root of the problem, in that what you've just pointed out is true. We have beaten a lot of diseases in the United States, but there are still third world countries that have not beaten these diseases, and anyone is just one plane ride away from bringing those infections to us.
Let's go to Heather, who's calling in from Hinesburg. Hi, Heather, go ahead.
Hi. I was just concerned that, you know, there's that whistleblower from Merck, the company that makes the MMR vaccine, where he said that they had hidden evidence that the measles vaccine did have a link to autism. I was concerned about that, and I was also concerned that the idea of trying to protect our immune-compromised children from having everybody vaccinated. Clearly, we can't, you know, handle the people coming in from other borders. But also, we know that vaccines can shed from vaccinated children, so even up to 2 months. So it means that just because someone's vaccinated doesn't mean that they are actually safe for these immune-compromised kids, whereas kids that actually did have the natural disease itself, they have lifelong immunity, and they won't be shedding, they won't be causing that harm, that potential harm.
We're going to talk more, Heather, about the medical science behind vaccines with a pediatrician on the show later in the hour. So we're going to double back on some of the issues that you just brought up there, because they are concerns that are often cited by parents. Let's go to Sarah, who's calling in from Underhill. Hi, Sarah. You're on the air.
Hi.
Go right ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Hi. I am concerned that people get vaccinated for the herd immunity reason. My daughter, who is now an adult, reacted to the pertussis vaccine as an infant and cannot get it and is still vulnerable. Her doctor, she's 30 now, her doctor told her, well, yeah, it'll either kill you or it won't if she takes another pertussis vaccine. And I, for that reason and to protect children, I think everyone should be immunized unless they have an actual medical reason not to be.
So, Sarah, you support removing the philosophical exemption?
Or removing both, even the religious exemption.
Got it. Yeah, Sarah, thanks for that comment. I appreciate it. Senator Mullen, before we let you go, what's your sense of whether or not this will pass both chambers and get through the governor?
Well, I think it's an uphill climb, but if enough Vermonters get involved and make an outreach for the public health by contacting their legislators, I think it's possible. I mean, I wouldn't waste everybody's time by putting in a bill if it wasn't possible. Certainly, I think there are enough votes in the Senate to pass it again. The question is whether or not there has been enough change in the House to pass it at this point in time. I've always known the governor to be someone who's reasonable and willing to listen, and I'm not that afraid that if the House and the Senate passed a bill that the governor would veto it, because I really think that given all the knowledge, if people could sit down with him and show him the studies that the benefits outweigh the risks, I think he can be convinced, and so I'm not giving up.
That's Senator Kevin Mullen. He's the lead sponsor of a bill to eliminate the philosophical exemption from Vermont's immunization laws. Senator Mullen, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you, Jane.
Coming up, we'll talk with a member of the Vermont Coalition for Vaccine Choice about why she thinks the law should stand as it is. And then we'll have a pediatrician join us to answer your questions about how vaccines work. If you have a question, you can call 1-800-639-2211 or post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today, we are spending the hour talking about vaccines. They've become a very hot topic nationally, and some Vermont legislators are attempting to take action on the vaccine issue by removing the philosophical, and in the case of the House bill, the religious exemption from vaccination laws that are tied to school attendance. If you have a question about why some parents feel strongly that they should not be compelled to follow the required vaccination schedule, call 1-800-639-2211. That number again is 1-800-639-2211. You can also carry on the conversation that's already happening on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. We already heard from Senator Kevin Mullen, who's sponsoring one of the bills to tighten exemptions. Now we are going to turn to Dorian Yates, who's with the Vermont Coalition for Vaccine Choice. She's traveling in New York City for work today and joins us from a studio there. Dorian, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Jane. Great to be here.
Could you respond first just to the proposed idea of removing the philosophical exemption, and then we'll get deeper into some of your concerns about vaccines. Why do you think it's important for that choice, the philosophical exemption, to be available to parents?
Well, Jane, first of all, it's a law that has been in place for nearly 40 years without incident. At the time it was passed, the national vaccination rate in for measles was only 66.5%, and now in Vermont it's nationally it's over 90%. So when the law was passed, vaccination rates were incredibly low, and the legislature saw fit to include exemptions so that people could make informed decisions and have informed consent for medical care, which is provided to them in all other situations. You can refuse medical care. It's a basic tenet of our patient bill of rights when you go to a hospital or a doctor's office.
It's also not eliminated from Vermont. I mean, you even if this bill were to go through, you would still be able to choose for your children whether or not they get the vaccines that are required for school attendance. It would just eliminate the ability for parents to send their children to schools.
That's true, but given that state education is mandated, that presents people with an interesting conundrum, because they're having to choose between the right to the public education that's mandated by law versus what they're thinking is a prudent medical decision for themselves and their families.
We got a note from Dr. Louis DiNicola, who's a supporter of Senator Mullen's bill. And Dr. Nicola said, if we have a proven, effective, and scientifically proven safe way to protect children from potentially fatal illness in public schools, from diseases that can also be spread to others, how can we not require children, teachers, daycare professionals to be fully vaccinated to attend public schools or to care for children? The history of Vermont has been to work to protect children and provide a safe environment for kids. We've repeatedly developed legislation to prevent or to protect children, child abuse laws, car restraint laws, smoking in a car with children present, and many more. All of these laws protect children directly and other children that may be put in a risk situation who are unable to be vaccinated or who have taken all the recommended steps but were one of the few who did not respond. He says parents should not be allowed to philosophically object to the vaccines and still send their children to public schools. Dorian Yates, what's your response to that?
Well, I understand that that's Dr. DiNicola's position, but the reality is that this is about public health and safety, which means it's about everybody's public health and safety. You can't pick and choose who you're protecting or whose health and safety you're concerned about. That's like saying you're only going to be concerned about safe sex for heterosexual people, but not homosexual people. You can't actually do that. Everybody plays a part in the public health and safety. And so everybody matters in this. The other thing I would say about that is that even if we had 100% vaccination, what we now know is that really wasn't in the public psyche, say 20, 30 years ago, is that vaccines aren't 100% effective. There's no vaccine that's 100% effective. That's not a belief. That's not an opinion. That's fact. And each disease that there's a vaccine for, it dramatically varies the effectiveness of that vaccine. So as has been all over in the news, this year's flu vaccine is only 23% effective. Now, I don't know how many other products you would consider purchasing that only worked 23% of the time. I don't think too many. In the case of measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine, there it seems to be a little more a range of something like 90 to 95 or 88 to 95% effective. So what that means is if you have 100 people vaccinated, that percentage of them might be protected, but that other percentage isn't going to be protected. But here's the thing, Jane, you don't know who those people are that are going to be unprotected, whose immune responses aren't going to respond to the vaccine. And so everybody's at risk. At the end of the day, the sort of blame or this vitriol can be placed on people who make a informed, I might add, legal decision to choose to exempt from one or more vaccines. But the reality is you know who those people are when they have chosen not to vaccinate, if they have chosen to, say, not get the chickenpox vaccine. The school keeps records of those. The health department gets those records. And people know who that is. In the vaccinated population, no matter what they've been vaccinated for, you don't know who's going to respond to the vaccine or be at risk for the illness, which means that actually everybody is at risk because you don't know who is protected by a given vaccine or not.
Let's go to some of the phone calls that are coming in. We're talking right now with Dorian Yates. She's a member of the Vermont Coalition for Vaccine Choice. And we're talking a little bit about whether or not Vermont should remove the philosophical exemption from its requirements for vaccines for children who are attending school. There's legislation in both chambers that would remove that exemption. Dorian Yates and the Vermont Coalition for Vaccine Choice support keeping the law as it stands. If you have a thought about this, you can go to vpr.net and click on Vermont Edition, or you can call 1-800-639-2211. Let's go to Judith calling in from Cabot. Hi, Judith, you're on.
Hi, this is Judith, and I just have a side issue which I haven't heard very much discussion about, but I think it's one of the reasons that people do hold off getting all these inoculations, and that is the relationship, the kind of untrustworthy relationship that Big Pharma has with our government, with our doctors, and with lobbyists. And I think that bears some discussion. The general distrust people have of some of these big corporations and the relationship to government. I do respect the pharmacies. I think they have done a wonderful job of preventing many diseases, but there's a piece of information out there that we're not talking about that is, I'd say, rather negative.
Judith, thank you for your call. That whole issue of trust in both pharmaceutical companies and in the government is a big one. Let's go to Tom in Morrisville. Hi, Tom. Go right ahead.
Yeah, hi. No, I'm just kind of mad that informed parents that take the effort to really look into the risks of vaccination and weigh the benefits are being scapegoated for the failed efficacy of the MMR and the whooping cough vaccines, which have been exposed by some of the pharmaceutical companies' own whistleblowers. Now, I also have to wonder, they're talking about how it's no big deal to exclude unvaccinated children from public schools, libraries, and other public spaces. Are you planning on, people that are proposing this, are they planning on giving tax rebates for these public services that we paid for that we're going to be banned from receiving? And another concern that I had is that once the exemptions were removed, there's no guarantee that additional vaccines like the very dangerous HPV vaccine or, you know, ineffective flu vaccines won't also become mandated.
Tom, thanks for your call and for sharing your concerns. I appreciate hearing from you. We're going to take one more, and then Dorian Yates will come back to you. Mary Ellen is calling in from Dummerston. Hi, Mary Ellen. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I am a parent who refused to vaccinate my children, and just for the sake of saying, I am a highly educated person with a master's degree. I'm a nurse. And I think there are some very important issues that the legislature has a responsibility to respond to. First of all, there's a civil liberties issue here, forcing people to receive medical care against their will, which is against the law in the United States. And then citing AMA and Big Pharma research is really ridiculous because it's only one side of the story. There are a lot of competent medical studies that have been done showing actual harm. I think that when you cite that kind of science on the show and you don't have somebody on the show who can cite the other side of the quote science, that's very problematic. So I would encourage you to have a show that would host those kinds of folks who can speak to the issue. And I think that, you know, my kids did get some normal childhood illnesses. They were treated by a local homeopath extremely successfully. They now have lifetime immunity. What they didn't have was chronic ear infections, chronic strep throat, asthma, allergies, ADD, and all the things that I saw all of their peers sick all the time throughout their childhood. My kids never had those issues.
Well, Mary Ellen, that's lucky for you that they didn't, and I see your perspective. One more here we got from Robert, who says, with most arguments, I can see both sides and understand why they are arguing in the first place, and usually I'll see the merits of all parties involved. With this particular instance, I cannot see the logic behind those who wallow in ignorance and refuse to immunize their children because of some random article they saw on the web. All right, so a lot there, Dorian Yates, a lot of comments from people, several of whom say they don't think the philosophical exemption should be removed. Robert doesn't see your side of the argument. You're a parent of adult children. What would you do, or what are other parents in your organization thinking they'll do if the rule does change and it goes through that the philosophical exemption is eliminated?
Well, as you said, Jane, my children are adults, but I think that that's just speculation. We don't know. The law hasn't been changed. And obviously, we're hoping that it remains intact. I think that it's important to note that, you know, what Senator Mullins said is absolutely right. We need to look at right information. And I am sorry to hear that he is still quoting numbers that aren't accurate. You know, there's no reason for that. We have solid numbers. The health department has done their job. They collect the numbers from the school nurses all over the state. And the vaccine levels are high. I'm really perplexed by why it keeps going out to the press and the legislators that Vermont has low vaccine levels. I think Commissioner Chen will tell you that that's inaccurate. The measles vaccine coverage for kindergarten is 92%. That exceeds the CDC goals currently in place at 90%, and there's a CDC goal of 95% for the year 2020. By seventh grade, that's up to 97%, which means we've already exceeded the CDC goals for the year 2020, and exemptions are only 3%. So this notion of that Vermont's numbers are low is not accurate. And Commissioner Chen and the Department of Health make that very clear. All you have to do is go to their website and look up the data. It's right there for anybody to see. We don't have to speculate. We don't have to inflate numbers. I think maybe one of the reasons Senator Mullen brought up that number is that in kindergarten, there's almost a 5% level of what's called provisional allowances, people who just haven't gotten around to getting their vaccines for their children or getting caught up in them. But those are being lumped in that number of unvaccinated people when they're not taking an exemption. They're not part of the exemption. So we actually have very high vaccination rates, and that is perplexing to me why that keeps getting, that's not right information. And I agree with Senator Mullen that that's what we need is right information. But he needs to start expressing the accurate information and the accurate situation in Vermont.
That's Dorian Yates. She's with the Vermont Coalition for Vaccine Choice. Thank you very much for talking with us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Jane.
Coming up, we're going to continue talking about vaccines, but we're going to get out of the policy arena and speak with a pediatrician about how the vaccines work, why they're scheduled when they are, and she'll be able to answer other medical questions that you might have about immunizations. You can post your questions at vpr.net by clicking on Vermont Edition or call 1-800-639-2211. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. We're talking about vaccines today. Earlier, we heard from one of the sponsors of legislation that would remove the ability for parents to claim a philosophical objection to the required vaccinations for children attending school in Vermont. And we were just talking to one of the representatives of the Vermont Coalition for Vaccine Choice. She says the exemption should stay in place and that parents should have the ability to make decisions for their children and still have them attend schools. For the rest of the hour, we're going to move away from specific policy prescriptions and talk about the medical issues. And if you have a question about the science, about the ethics, or about the medical recommendations around vaccines, call 1-800-639-2211. Again, that's 1-800-639-2211. Or you can continue the conversation that's already happening on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. We are joined now by Dr. Rebecca Bell, a pediatric critical care physician at the University of Vermont's Children's Hospital. Dr. Bell, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Jane.
I understand you've been listening to the rest of the program and
yes.
writing down some notes. Is
yes.
there anything that you heard that you want to respond to before we get into some of the other issues?
Yeah, sure. Well, I think some of the questions that some of the callers brought up were really good questions and things that I've seen a lot and people ask about a lot. So one I wanted to talk about is about the risk of someone who's immunocompromised around other folks who are immunized. And that's a really big misconception that people have. So we take care of a lot of immunocompromised children at the Children's Hospital. We have pediatric oncologists, and we have actually pediatric transplant specialists too. We do kidney transplants. And we make sure that the family of those children are all vaccinated. And the reason why is it's very, very dangerous for an immunocompromised person to come into contact, say, with someone who had measles. And people worry, you know,
Has measles?
Who has the actual
infection.
Not
who had it years and years
no,
ago.
No.
Yeah, just clarifying.
Yes. And then people worry, well, it's a live vaccine. Does that mean, and we know that when we do tests on body fluids, we can sometimes find the weakened vaccine virus in a person's body. And people wonder, can that get other people infected? And it cannot.
This is the question about can vaccinated children shed the,
exactly.
shed the illness?
Yeah. And that is a big misconception. So we tell, you know, if children, immunocompromised children at home and their sibling is due for the MMR, we say, please get the MMR. It's very, very important. So that's one sort of clarification. And then, you know, there's this other piece that people bring up about people use the term failed efficacy. And, you know, really, it's true that no vaccine is 100% effective. And that's something we've known for a long time. And it's for some people, it doesn't work in a small percentage. And other folks, like things like the pertussis vaccine, we know you have to get a booster. So that's something that our epidemiologists are studying, and they're trying to make the schedule appropriate so people are covered. But that just means even more so that people need to be vaccinated, because the fewer people who actually have the disease that can come into contact with people, the fewer people will get sick.
Other misconceptions that you want to clear up just quickly? I know there's still one that we, one of the callers even brought it up about the links between the MMR vaccine and autism, for example.
Yeah, so there have been about 25 good population level studies done on the link between autism and vaccines, as well as thimerosal and vaccines. Thimerosal and autism. And these are large studies that in aggregate cover millions of children in many, many different countries. And no link has been found. And I think early on, it was very reasonable to look at vaccines as potentially a link. You know, a lot of times in science, we come up with a hypothesis and we think, you know, is there a link here? We need to evaluate this. And this question has really been thoroughly answered. And a lot of the autism advocacy groups are really saying, okay, guys, like, let's move on. We need to focus our research dollars on looking at treatments and diagnosis for autism. And we know now that, you know, the early developments of autism or what lead to autism really happen in fetal development. And so we don't think that vaccines have anything to do with autism.
Let's go to Luke, who's calling in from Whitehall, New York. Hi, Luke. Go ahead.
Hi. I'd just like to make a comment. I'm a little bothered when people trivialize objections to vaccines only because I've read some stuff online about how AIDS has been linked to the polio vaccine. And in fact, a quick Google search or a quick YouTube will actually bring you to the people that were in charge of making the vaccine in Africa back in the 50s. And they claim that they mistakenly imported the AIDS virus into the polio vaccine because they were growing the vaccine cultures in live chimpanzee livers, I believe is what they say. And I wondered if anybody else had read this and could verify this.
Luke, thanks for the call. Dr. Bell?
That, you know, I've spent a lot of time looking at different misconceptions of vaccines. That is not one I've heard at all.
So about the polio vaccine, that there's no risk of getting AIDS?
No, absolutely not. No.
Okay, Luke, thanks for the call. Sue's calling in from Essex. Hi, Sue. You're on.
Yes, hi. I guess this kind of goes along with what your previous caller was just talking about. There actually was a show on NPR years ago that reported about the use of monkey tissue in the making of vaccines. And at that time, monkey tissue was showing up in the tumor cells of people with cancer. And my question was, why was the monkey tissue being used in the U.S. When those vaccines were available in Canada without using the monkey tissue? Is it still being used today?
Dr. Bell?
I don't know the details of the history of that. That is a common concern among people. And what I can say for sure right now is that no vaccines that we use currently contain any monkey tissue.
One of the questions that have come up in both of these are ingredients that are in vaccines, yeah, or ability to understand what is actually being put in someone's, yeah, body. We got another note on this from JT, who says, what seems to be missing from many of the discussions is a description of vaccine ingredients, which can include mercury and aluminum that's added as a preservative or to influence the action of the active ingredient. A person may be in favor of vaccination against disease, but opposed to injecting other ingredients that they would never ingest willingly in food, for example. If the discussion and regulation were to better address the facts of all ingredients, maybe we would see less vaccine opposition. Dr. Bell, can you talk a little bit about,
yeah,
that? Because there is a concern about what's going in my body or my child's body, you know, when parents talk about this.
I think I'm really glad you brought that up because a lot of people have questions about that. And I think the important thing to sort of set the stage when we talk about this is that in toxicology, when we talk about how substances affect the body and how things could be toxic to the body, there are two really important things that we need to know. One is, what is the substance in question? And two, and this is even more important, is what is the dose? So anything can be toxic at a high enough dose. And that's really, really important because, for instance, water can be toxic. Water can kill you at a very high dose. And so what oftentimes parents see are these lists of ingredients. And they say, this is what's in the vaccine. And they sound really scary. But what I can say is that there is nothing in a vaccine at a high enough dose that would cause any problem in a child. So the listener brought up aluminum. Aluminum is one of the most abundant elements actually on Earth. It's in the earth, it's in the water, it's in the food that we eat, it's in the air that we breathe. And when you add up all the aluminum that a child gets over the course of 6 months of vaccines, it's a small fraction of what that child gets through breast milk. And it's an even smaller percentage of what that child would get if that child was formula fed. And they've actually done studies where they check a child's aluminum level in their blood. And then, you know, and we all have aluminum in our blood. And then it gets, we get the vaccine and then they check the level again and there's no change. And so it's really important that parents ask about this, because what you see online is a list of really, really scary ingredients. Another one that people bring up a lot is formaldehyde. I mean, that sounds horrible. But actually what people don't know is that formaldehyde is a really important substance in our body. We make it. We use it to break down proteins. And if you were to test a two-month-old's blood, the level of formaldehyde in that child's blood is higher than included in any vaccine.
How do you talk to parents, though, who have these concerns? And, you know, we've heard from a couple people who say, I go online and I've read this or I've read that. And it can be really hard to figure out what's fact, what's fiction, what's from a reputable source. And in some cases, for people to say to even trust their physician. So how do you talk to people about why you think vaccines are safe and what all of the science is saying?
Yeah, so I think parents are asked to do a really hard job, right? They're constantly having to assess risk and benefit. And vaccines have been so effective that they've really taken away even the memory of disease in our minds, especially for young parents. And so the benefit is invisible to them, so they see no benefit. And even if you say the risk of a serious adverse event with a vaccine such as a allergic reaction is 1 in 1 million, that seems too much if they believe there's no benefit. And so I work in the pediatric intensive care unit. And so I don't actually give routine childhood immunizations, but I take care of children who are very sick and ill. And so from my perspective, the risks of not immunizing are very great. And I've seen children who are very sick and who have died from vaccine preventable illness. So from my perspective, I think it's helpful to sort of talk a lot about the benefit of vaccine, because if parents really believe that benefit doesn't exist, it's going to be really hard to convince them to get it.
Let's go to Anne calling in from Manchester. Hi, Anne, you're on.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I have a comment and a question. I read the book by Andrew Wakefield, and from that I gleaned that he was suggesting that the MMR vaccination should be spread out instead of being given all in one go, particularly for children who have compromised immune systems. I was wondering if there's been any research done on children who are compromised or have immune deficiencies that have had the MMR vaccination and then have become autistic. I know that you're saying that the vaccinations have nothing to do with autism, but I wondered if there was any research particularly with autistic children who seem to have got autistic symptoms after they've been vaccinated.
And we're going to stop you there and go to Dr. Bell because we're short on time.
Sure. So you bring up a few things. One thing that's very important to remember is that Andrew Wakefield had a patent on that he was trying to present to make his own measles vaccine. So he had a big conflict of interest, and he was actually being paid by a law firm that was presenting a large suit against the MMR vaccine makers. So he was actually being paid by lawyers to find evidence against the MMR vaccine. And we know now that he actually, his study was discredited and he falsified data, et cetera. But I think your question too is about, I think you brought up two different things. One is immunocompromised. And again, if a child is truly immunocompromised, meaning that they say they have HIV in very, very low white counts, or they are undergoing cancer treatments, then we do not give them the MMR because they could develop actual disease. The question about autism is a good one, and it has been studied in many different ways. And I had sort of mentioned more than 1 million children have been studied. So they've looked at children who have received vaccines, who haven't received vaccines. They've gone back and had experts look at video of children who received the vaccine ended up having autism and were able to see that there were autistic signs earlier on than before the vaccine was given. So there have been a great number of studies looking at vaccines and autism.
That's Dr. Rebecca Bell. She's a pediatric critical care physician at the University of Vermont Children's Hospital. Thank you for taking the time to talk with us today.
Sure, thank you.
Listeners, I want to tell you, you can visit our website to find links to the organizations we've spoken with today and the legislation we discussed at the top of the hour. That's all at vpr.net/Vermont Edition, and you can continue the conversation there or on Vermont Edition's Facebook page. Tomorrow, we'll move from one controversial subject to another, school consolidation. The leaders of the two State House Education Committees will update us on legislation that could push small schools towards consolidating. Join us for that discussion tomorrow, live at noon, and share your thoughts by writing to Vermont Edition at vpr.net. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.